You're listening to the Health Courage Collective podcast, episode 63, Think Twice Before Popping That Pill.
Welcome to the Health Courage Collective podcast, the show for women who are too busy to slog through hours of generalized, inapplicable, and often contradictory health information, but too smart to ignore that a few minutes of focused attention now can prevent years of suffering in the future. I'm your host, Christina Hackett, a pharmacist who doesn't want you to live on prescriptions, a certified coach specifically trained to maximize your potential, and a compulsive learner obsessed with preventative, cutting-edge, holistic, and integrative medicine. I'm on a mission to increase your physical and mental resilience so you can fearlessly look forward to your next 40-plus limitless years. Your time is now. Let's go.
Hello, welcome, welcome. I'm so glad you're here today. Like always, you are awesome. How has your week been? Did you stop playing not to lose? I'd love to hear how you switched from playing not to lose to playing to win, even in small ways. You can click the link in the show notes or go to healthcouragecollective.com to join my free non-Facebook community and let me and other like-minded women know what worked for you. Then we can all rise together. That's like us. These little mind shifts can start a chain reaction that can lead to some pretty big changes in our lives. This week, we're going to talk about why we might want to think twice before taking some common medications. Obviously, this can't be an exhaustive list, but it's what first came to my mind as medications that people frequently take. When I help people think through their supplement strategy, which I love to do, I start with asking them their tolerance for taking pills or powders or liquids or whatever the case may be. Some people don't mind swallowing a whole fistful of supplements, and others feel gross taking more than one or two capsules. That's just helpful to know as you compare what's best for you with what you're actually likely to do. And of course, coaching and behavior design can come into play there if anything is actually holding us back. But we don't want to promise ourselves we'll do things that subconsciously feel wrong. I think it's helpful to start with a similar question about traditional medications. Are you someone who looks for a pill to solve every deviation from comfort? It's totally okay if you are. We can work with that. Or are you someone who has to be partially dead before you'll agree to take a Tylenol? That's how I describe myself, but it's not better. It can cause big problems if you need the benefits a medication can provide, but you're blinded by your stubbornness, right? So my goal isn't to convince you that you should never take any traditional medications. I'm glad we live in a world where we have the option to use these medications, many of which are miraculous. My 12-year-old Kipling, who you've met if you listened to the two episodes he was on, was asking me a bunch of stuff about leprosy the other day. I don't know why, but it was on his mind. And I was telling him that, yeah, it's really rare, but it's very treatable with some antibiotics called Dapsone and Rifampicin. And we were imagining how different history would be if people had access to Dapsone or any of the other miraculous drugs we have now earlier in time, like penicillin or heparin or albuterol or epinephrine. Amazing. We don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, but we also don't want to be like, I think, the majority of people who want a pill for every ill. I once had a pharmacy school professor named Dr. Roll, he's kind of a legend, at least here in Utah, who would say that what separates man from beast is man's insatiable desire to take a pill. I think it's part of the quick fix mentality that's part of our culture. There are cases where the quick fix is the right approach, and others that require a deeper dive, and the trick is learning to recognize the difference. That's the sweet spot. I'd love to help you figure out yours. So, why might we want to avoid some common medications? Not just because they're traditional or synthetic. There are plenty of all-natural products that need to be avoided. Think rattlesnake venom and botulism toxin. But there are some medications that cause problems that we might not be aware of. We think they're safe because they're over-the-counter or everyone is taking them. They might as well be in the water supply. Some of them actually are in the water supply, and that's a whole nother problem and a discussion for a different day. And a lot of them are band-aids masking the symptoms of a deeper root cause problem. This is what my episode 19 was about, spray painting the leaves green instead of nourishing the roots. So let's just take a high-level glance over some of these common medications, and you can dive deeper into anything that applies to you and decide with your doctor what the right course of action for you is. And it's very possible that the right course of action for you is to stay on the drug. Don't do anything dangerous or stupid. Okay, I was going to start over the counter, but I'm kind of changing my mind. Let's start with prescriptions and move backwards. Antidepressants and thyroid medications are both really common. There are things you could be doing to optimize your utilization of both of these, but that's a pretty involved process that's beyond the scope of this episode. There are some nuances to thyroid management that can help a lot, like not just taking Synthroid and getting your blood tested once a year. And there's some really effective stuff you can do with gut health to improve depression. I think most people willing to listen to a podcast about being cautious about taking medications know that you don't want to take antibiotics unless you really have to. Screwing up your microbiome should be avoided at all costs. Go back and listen to episode 39 if you need a reminder about how cool your holobiome is. A lot of genetic instructions about what happens to us is outsourced and stored in the cloud, so to speak, meaning the DNA of the bacteria in our gut decide a lot what happens to us, which is kind of weird, but also kind of awesome because we can't change our own DNA, but we can change our gut flora population. We also don't want to perpetuate antibiotic resistance, both in the world at large or inside of our own bodies. So avoid antibiotics unless you have an actual bacterial infection. Then take them and finish the course, of course. I'm not a fan of the cholesterol medications that end in statin, especially for women. Be careful and take your heart health seriously. If your doctor suggests starting a statin, don't just dismiss the idea outright and do nothing. But you also don't have to start taking a statin that day. Take a few days or weeks to do your due diligence and consider all of your options. Same with osteoporosis medications. They're called bisphosphonates. They're named Fosamax, Actonel, Boniva, and Reclast. I for sure want you to have strong bones. You're going to need them to do all the amazing stuff that's ahead of you. But there are usually better ways to strengthen them than those medications, especially if you're smart like you, and start strengthening them while you're still young. For older people with really fragile bones, it might end up being the only option, and it's not a good one, but that's not going to be you, and the answer is not calcium. Okay, just really quickly, blood pressure and type 2 diabetes medications are also really common. You need your blood pressure and blood sugar under control, or you're a ticking time bomb, so don't ignore that. But also know that your blood pressure isn't high because you have a lisinopril deficiency, right? There's gotta be an actual reason, and if you can slowly correct that and work with your doctor to watch that, you might be able to eventually stop your medication. And if it's suggested that maybe you might need to start something for blood pressure sometime soon, there are other options. Totally. Maybe we'll do a whole episode on that in the future. Hey there, just a quick interruption to say, I think the jury's still kinda out on how bad and in what way it's really bad to put aluminum on your skin, but it doesn't seem great and I figured, why not avoid it? Well, because all of the aluminum-free deodorants I ever tried didn't work. Until I tried Lume. This is the first aluminum-free deodorant I ever tried that actually worked. I was instantly converted. Then, over time, I discovered that the answer to my whole family's itchy skin after every shower problem is Lume's acidified body wash. It's awesome, and their acidified body butter keeps our skin soft and hydrated. They even have a laundry product that makes your clothes smell great. I can't say enough good about Lume. Plus, their commercials are hilarious. You should watch one on YouTube if you haven't seen one yet. If you want to give Lume a try, there's a link in the show notes that will give you $5 off your order. My favorite is the Pink Peony Body Wash. It smells like washing yourself with bubble gum, which I wouldn't recommend, but I do recommend Lume. Okay, back to the show. I have a lot to say about how poorly type 2 diabetes is treated in traditional medicine. I recently did this workshop where I was learning how to express something important in the form of a story, and she made us all write a caveman version of the story. This was to force us to cut out everything but the very most basic essentials. It was really hard, but so powerful to get to the root of what we were trying to express. So, here's my caveman version of this. Type 2 diabetes from too much insulin. Most drugs make body make more insulin. Make problem worse. Make no sense. Need to lower insulin and increase sensitivity instead. Now, this would not fit the criteria for my workshop because diabetes has 4 syllables and sensitivity has 5. I fail. Bring shame to family. But that's by way of not rambling on for hours and hours. You're welcome. I will say that the first line medication called metformin is on the nice list. If you're told you're pre-diabetic or early stage type 2 diabetic, don't hesitate to take metformin as you start your lifestyle changes. I'd be happy to help you design a plan that's right for you. Another rabbit hole we won't go down, but I do want you to think twice about, is amphetamines or stimulants for ADHD. So many people take stimulants, you guys. It's crazy. It really bothers me, especially in kids. There are for sure people who need treatment, and I'm all about you maximizing your potential. But trouble focusing isn't caused by a Ritalin deficiency. There are lots of options, and I get that it's really easy for me, who has never experienced this problem, to say, oh, you can just learn to meditate. But I really do think that a lot can be done with brain training exercises and fixing mitochondrial function and gut health. Maybe eliminating foods like gluten or dairy. There are even prescription video games now. Don't tell my kids. They would love it if I had to dispense a video game. That doesn't quite work like that. I'm always telling them that video games rot your brain, and they like to show me all the articles they come across that show improved concentration, self-mastery, hand-eye coordination, and memory. It's a little dance we do. But I do recommend thinking twice before messing around with your neurotransmitters. It physically changes your brain. Plus, having highly abusable drugs lying around your house is also problematic. Okay, so the last common prescription medication we'll briefly mention is birth control pills. I might need to make a caveman story about this too, because there's so much to say. I wrote a blog post about it years ago. I'll put a link in the show notes. Basically, hormonal birth control contains no hormones. It contains endocrine disruptors that mess with your fine-tuned physiology and cause long-term problems. Taking them incites hormonal chaos that can mess up your hormones for a long time. Not ovulating for long periods of time is problematic. They increase your risk for blood clots, autoimmune disease, depression, diabetes, high blood pressure, heart disease, osteoporosis, inflammation, and more. They disrupt your libido, your vaginal health, your gut health, your brain health, and your liver's ability to detox. We're meant to have a certain ebb and flow of hormones, and screwing that up causes problems. To some people, the benefit outweighs the physiological mayhem. Just don't believe what society tells you about taking the pill being no big deal. Whew, okay, you're still with me? I hope this helps as you make medication decisions. Let's move over-the-counter. Most over-the-counter things you take to alleviate self-limited symptoms, and taking a cough suppressant or antidiarrheal medication for one day is fine. I do think we tend to over-treat fever. If your fever isn't crazy high and you're not miserable from it, letting your body heat up is actually beneficial to your recovery. No need to treat just the number on the thermometer. Similar story with acute inflammation from an injury. It swells up for a reason. You don't need to specifically treat the swelling. Okay, let's think through some over-the-counter drugs people tend to take more regularly. We'll start with pain. How do you feel about Tylenol? That's kind of a dumb question. You need one of those ready-at-hand responses for when you get asked dumb questions like, my lawyer has instructed me not to answer that question. I think we often underestimate the power of Tylenol. It can be really effective. Most people know that overdosing on Tylenol damages your liver. It's important to know that Tylenol is in a ton of different combination drugs, so you have to add up all the acetaminophen from all the different things you take and not exceed 4,000 milligrams in a day. Read your labels. But it's not like 4,001 milligrams is harmful and 2,000 milligrams is halfway harmful. You're not a little bit damaging your liver by taking 500 milligrams. Your body can completely clear acetaminophen up to a certain tipping point. I think Tylenol is a good go-to for pain, especially headaches. While we're talking about liver detoxing, it's good to mention the rain barrel theory of general detox. The idea is that our ability to detox is like a rain barrel in our body. We can tolerate a certain amount of toxins. There are always some coming in and some being removed. But eventually, we could get to a tipping point and the barrel will start to overflow. Toxins are accumulating faster than they can be removed. That's a problem that results in a whole myriad of symptoms. It's a little simplistic for several reasons, but I think it's a good way to think about detoxification and our toxic load. Every time we put medications into our body that need to be metabolized and detoxed, we're adding to the volume in our barrel. It's an important thing to be mindful of, but taking herbal remedies also adds to that volume because they need to be metabolized and processed too. So don't be fooled by thinking that all drugs are bad and all natural remedies are good. Okay, moving along. If you chose not to take Tylenol for your pain, you'll likely choose ibuprofen or naproxen instead. These are Advil or Motrin or Aleve. They're NSAIDs, which are non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. So is aspirin. There's a lot of stuff about NSAIDs that you should know about if you're going to take them, so read the warnings, especially if you plan to take them on a regular basis. You can easily find data about how they increase your risk of bleeding, especially stomach bleeding, and they decrease kidney function, causing impaired toxin removal and fluid retention and increased blood pressure. They can also raise your risk for heart attack and stroke. That's all pretty well known. What most people won't warn you of is that NSAIDs actually impair mitochondrial functioning. That's bad news if you want a lot of energy. It's a problem in skeletal muscle, so working out while on ibuprofen is not optimal. A study in the Journal of Molecular and Cellular Cardiology shows that mitochondrial impairment of heart muscle cells is likely a big piece in why they increase the risk of heart attack. NSAIDs reduce cardiac muscle cells' ability to produce energy, increase reactive oxygen species, and impair heart muscle cells' ability to degrade harmful proteins. If you remember back to episode 43, one of the easiest ways to quickly create leaky gut is to take non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. NSAIDs damage the mucosal barrier in both the small and the large intestines. This causes holes in the protective layer inside your intestines and makes it really easy for lectins, gliadin from gluten, bacteria, and toxins to stimulate zonulin to blow the tight junctions wide open and let all kinds of interlopers into our bloodstream and lymphatic system. This causes more inflammation and eventually more pain. A lot of researchers think that the number one cause of inflammation in the Western world is anti-inflammatory drugs. Kind of ironic. Lastly, back in episode 59, we talked about pro-resolution of inflammation. Do you remember? It had to do with fish oil. After acute inflammation, pro-resolution pathways prevent excess inflammation and bystander tissue damage, clear pathogens, and remove dying cells and debris from the battlefield while promoting host defense and immunity. But, dun dun dun, the pro-resolution pathway is actually blocked by NSAIDs. So taking ibuprofen and naproxen actually prevents or delays the resolution of inflammation. Crazy. Click the link in the show notes to suggest an episode topic if you want a whole episode about healthier ways to bring down your inflammation and pain. We'll talk about curcumin and specialized pro-resolving mediators and maybe CBD. You are doing so well hanging in listening to all of this. The last thing we'll talk about is a super common over-the-counter drug class called the proton pump inhibitors. Tons of people take these every day of their lives. These are omeprazole, esomeprazole, lansoprazole, pantoprazole, and rabeprazole, commonly known as Prilosec, Nexium, Prevacid, Protonix, and Acefex. Way back when I was in pharmacy school, well, back then they weren't over-the-counter, you had to have a prescription, but I thought they were about as benign as it gets. Selectively turn off the acid pumps in your stomach for about 48 hours. NBD, right? Wrong. I knew you were expecting me to say that. There are actually all kinds of problems with chronic PPI use. One is that a lot of people who have gastroesophageal reflux or heartburn have too low of stomach acid, not too high, like a lot of them. So reducing acid more is not the right move. Let me know if you want to know more about that. There's an experiment you can run on yourself to find out. Another problem is that deciding to change the pH that nature intended to be in your GI tract increases the risk of developing a hard-to-catch condition called small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, or SIBO. Your large intestines have bajillions of bacteria, but your small intestines should not. So having them set up shop there and develop SIBO is not fun or easy to correct. Another problem with PPI medications is that raising your stomach pH impairs the absorption of a lot of key nutrients. You won't absorb proteins, vitamin B12, calcium, or magnesium adequately, along with some other minerals. That's a problem, especially as people get older and we worry about their decreasing muscle mass and bone density. I think it was around 2010 or so that studies started to come out saying, what do you know? All of these older folks on long-term PPIs are breaking their hips. So sad. Yet so many people, especially older people, are still on daily PPIs and they don't even know why. Eventually someone reminds them it's a quote stomach pill and they're like, okay, sounds like something I need. No! In most cases, there are legitimate uses for all of these. We're just stepping back and thinking twice. Most people don't do that. Lastly, proton pump inhibitors also help contribute to leaky gut. Altering your pH alters your gut microbiome and your ability to keep your tight junctions tight and the bad stuff from getting into your bloodstream. This can increase chances of developing autoimmune conditions and skin problems like eczema. Okay, you made it. Thank you so much for being here today. You are fabulous. I hope it was helpful to take a minute and think through why you might not want to take some common medications. It's not just about drugs are bad and vitamins and herbs are good. If you're going to be different and not take a drug, I think you should know the reason. Likewise, it will help you to be informed if you do decide to take something. You're not a bad person if you take naproxen or Prevacid or even birth control pills, but it does affect your body's ability to function at a high level, so you should take that into account as you execute your longevity strategy. If you don't have a longevity strategy, you should get one ASAP. You're not getting any younger. I can help. Next week, we're going to talk about resetting your set point. Until then, think twice about popping that pill and don't be normal.
Thank you so much for tuning into the Health Courage Collective podcast. I am truly honored that you have paid me the enormous compliment of your time and attention. I would be so grateful if you would share this podcast with someone you know and subscribe so you never miss an episode. This podcast is for entertainment and information purposes only. Statements and views on this podcast are not medical advice. This podcast, including Christina Hackett and producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse events by use of information contained herein. If you think you have a medical problem, consult a licensed physician.